Jason, the Bears have got a week 2 game coming up, and boy, is it a doozy. We'll break it down coming up on Hallis Intrigue. Hi, I'm Patrick Finley. He's Jason Leisure, and they are the Chicago Bears, and they are playing the Detroit Lions on Sunday. Jason, both teams need a win. You saw both teams last week. What is this challenge that the Bears have ahead of them?
It's a big one. I think so many people, Patrick, in the offseason talking about the Lions, who went 15-2 last year, by the way, and have been a championship contender each of the last two seasons and are certainly a championship contender again this year. A lot of people had this confirmation bias in week one where they wanted to say all offseason how, oh, the Lions are going to come down now because they lost Aaron Glenn to the Jets and Ben Johnson to the Bears. And then they go out there and score 13 points against Green Bay and lose decisively. And it's like, see, we told you. I would not jump to that conclusion with the Lions. This was a top five offense the last 3 years. It was number one last year. And while Ben Johnson played a big part in getting them there, they can do this without Ben Johnson. They've still got a lot of the same pieces. So when I look at both teams in week one, the Bears and the Lions, the Bears losing to the Vikings, of course, and the Lions going into a total pressure cooker in Green Bay where that place was as – I've been to a lot of games in Green Bay in my life, and it wasn't the loudest I've ever heard it be there, but it was up there with Micah Parsons and the effect that he had on their energy. I think the Lions offensively and the Bears offensively are both going to play better in week two. And I would say, though, that the Lions better is better than the Bears better.
Dan Campbell was asked, I think yesterday, by some reporter in Detroit who kind of stammered through a question about – more or less, hey, why don't you just run Ben's plays? And his response was as short as you will ever see him be with a reporter.
He bristled.
Yeah.
And he's Mr. Friendly.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So how did you interpret that then?
I think he argued with the premise of the question because there were questions about pre-snap motion and things like that that they did not do. So he argued with that. But I think he seems annoyed, Jason, that they got their butts kicked by a division rival in the first game. You know, both he and Ben go out of their way to say, you know, we are friends, you know, and we will always be friends. But they're both competitive SOBs. And I don't think they are friends on Sunday at all. I think that they want to kill each other. And I mean, is there a good sense? Is that possible? Can I say
I'm going to be just like Dan Campbell now and be like, what are you asking?
No, but I think they can be as friendly as anybody 363 days a year.
Yeah.
But if we know Ben Johnson well, and we're starting to learn him, boy, he takes these competition things pretty seriously.
Yeah, I think you saw it Monday night after the game. Mm-hmm. And you'd sit here and say, every player, every coach, they're all competitive.
Right.
This whole industry is competitive. But you saw Ben Johnson, I think, you saw him trying to hold back. You saw his temperament, I think, Monday night after that game where there's all the buildup to this debut and all the work that's gone into it and then the thudding reality of how far they have to go. I think that Dan Campbell is really motivated in this because I don't know Dan Campbell I've had limited interactions with Dan Campbell over the years, but just from afar, just kind of reading between the lines, connecting some dots in his career and his comments, I suspect that the thing that irritates Dan Campbell the most, the thing that brought that tone out of him this week, is this perception that he can't do it without Ben Johnson.
Right.
That Ben Johnson is the brains of the operation here in Detroit because they've won more so on their offense than their defense. And this is the genius that did it all. And Dan Campbell, you know, is just this, you know, moose on the sideline who leaves everything to the snot-nosed computer punk, as he calls Ben Johnson. I just don't think that's the case. I think we should be well past the misconception that Dan Campbell doesn't know what he's doing. That was the idea when they first hired him. Everyone looks at, like, why would they hire Dan Campbell? What a goofy hire. And over years, you see, this guy really, really is good at being a head coach. And part of that job, if we go back, Patrick, to Matt Eberflus trying to operate in a similar role as Dan Campbell, trying to be the CEO-style head coach, part of that job when you do that, when you do it that way, like John Harbaugh, for example, is you insert yourself where needed. You get involved in wherever the problem is. You run to the fire. And I have a lot of confidence in Dan Campbell because he's got this track record.
Right.
All the Bears coaches come in, they have no track record. Dan Campbell has a track record now of being able to fix things. And I picture Dan Campbell intervening in their offense and getting things back on track. Again, I think both sides are going to play better. I just think there's so much more of a ceiling for what Detroit can do right now.
We talked to Declan Doyle today, and Declan was an assistant with Dan Campbell in New Orleans. And, you know, he was saying that Dan is just so authentically himself that you can't help but gravitate toward it. And that he said, you know, their team, their personality is him. And if that's true, I don't think, you know, I don't think they're going to take losing that opener very kindly. And I think the Bears are walking into a really terrible spot here.
They are. And again, we've talked about this with the, I mean, it's going to be so loud at Ford Field for their opener coming off a loss and the chance to go against the guy that all of their fans blame for deserting them to go to a division rival. But again, we've talked about this so much with the Bears this season. There is no greater source for potential improvement for any team than a young quarterback who, in theory, at any moment could get it.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about Caleb Williams for a minute. Not a good opener at all. I mean, just such a thud. That's putting it nicely. I'm sure you guys listening to this have a lot of other more colorful words to describe that game. But the entire offseason, Pat, is built toward helping this guy.
Mm-hmm.
Coaching hire, offensive line acquisitions, the draft. They draft a tight end 10th overall. With all of their other needs, they go to that to help him. Everything has been geared toward helping him, and just a terrible opener. If you didn't watch it, if you just looked at the stat line, okay, it's kind of whatever. It looks a lot like last year. I think it was worse in a lot of ways. I think it was really kind of at the bottom end of games I've seen Caleb Williams play, because he started 10 for 10, great, and then just it just fell off a cliff, and he kind of rescued his stat lines, if you can even call it that, because it's still not a good stat line. 60% completions and an 88 passer rating. He kind of rescued it with this late desperate drive when they were down 10. It didn't really change anything. The question I would put to you is, what are reasonable expectations for Caleb Williams in terms of, one, when do you really need to see that this is truly clicking with him and Ben Johnson? And two, what does it need to look like right now, week two?
I think it needs to look functional now. And by functional, I mean snap the ball without getting called for four false starts and one illegal shift. I think functional means hitting the open receiver in front of you on fourth and three. I think functional means checking into the right runs and out of, you know, the wrong ones. I don't think it's going to be perfect for a long time. And that's not a shot at anybody. I think that if the Bears know by the end of the year that this works, I think that's a tremendous success for them. Now, at what point does it go from little improvements every week to, oh my God, we may have something? I don't know, October, November? I mean, this is going to take some time. You know, you mentioned Dan Campbell and everybody kind of thinking he was a joke. For a year and a half, they weren't proven wrong. They were terrible. And then Ben Johnson takes over the offense and things click. They don't click right away, but they do click eventually. Preaching patience in Chicago when it comes to quarterbacks is foolish, and I'm willing to be the fool here, but I think big picture, it'll be months. Little picture, you need to see just a professional operation at the line of scrimmage, and you need to see it yesterday.
Yeah, I agree with everything you said. No response. Perfect.
No notes.
No, but in agreement with you,
right.
I would say that it is exhausting for people in Chicago to be asked by this team and these quarterbacks to be patient. And that's not Caleb Williams' fault that Mitch Trubisky and Justin Fields and Cade McNown and whoever else you want to drag up didn't work out. But he needs to understand that is the territory he is walking in right now, and that people have been asked for patience for so long. But to your point, Patrick, I think we're kind of on the same mindset as far as a timeline here. I'm looking at about halfway through the season, this needs to really start clicking. Now, that is asking for patience, too. You are able to ask for that patience if we're seeing incremental, meaningful progress week to week to week. I want to see this, if I'm the Bears, click between Ben Johnson and Caleb Williams around 8th game, 9th game, something like that. But it can't look this bad as it did in week one leading up to that. There's got to be clear evidence, clear trajectory toward that over the first half of the season. And here's an alarming thing about Caleb Williams' game. I mean, you have all these different verbs you use, like what, or adjectives rather, like what level of concern or panic or whatever. This is truly, I mean the word alarming when I say it. He is telling you, and the film supports this, there are many plays in that game against the Vikings where everything looks right until Caleb throws the ball.
Right.
Caleb told us this. This isn't my, I mean, it is my opinion, but he's saying it too. That is really alarming to me. I could tolerate, Pat, some of, I missed something because I'm still kind of learning this offense. I didn't see somebody. I had a motion wrong. Even the pre-snap penalties are more tolerable to me because they're part of the learning process. Having everything work and making the right decision and then sailing the ball over somebody's head?
Yeah.
That can't happen. That's not professional quarterbacking.
Nope, nope. And this is a guy who prides himself on accuracy and who at USC was accurate.
68% completions his senior year.
I'll point out to you that not, as is the case always, not everything was his fault. There's the corner route to DJ Moore in which DJ just changed the route because he was open and threw his hand up. And they weren't on the same page and it didn't work. You know, there were moments where, you know, he was on the run and had to decide between keeping it and throwing it. And Jason, that's what got my attention from that game is there were times to me when it looked a little too much like Justin Fields. And the idea of, ooh, okay, I'm going to get out of the pocket right now because good things typically happen when I do, and let's see what happens. He was the fourth leading rusher among quarterbacks.
Was he better throwing or running Monday?
Running.
That cannot be the answer.
Nope, cannot. You know, he was the fourth, he had the fourth most rushing yards among quarterbacks in week one, and the guys ahead of him were the guys you would think. I mean, it's Lamar Jackson, Jaden Daniels, and the third one I'm blanking
on. Josh Allen is usually one of them.
He was not. Who was the third? I'm looking
at it. The thing about those guys that you mentioned with their running ability is that...
Jalen Hurts
is another great example where that's another one of the guys that's always up there, and Josh Allen is usually up there among the league leaders in quarterback rushing yards. The thing that is that all those guys have in common, Patrick, is that they're all really good throwers. And this just... The running is kind of a break glass in case of emergency. Maybe not quite that with Lamar. Lamar uses it, but it's used as like support, mm-hmm. as a good secondary option to any one of those guys. Any quarterback that you just listed off mm-hmm. for me could play the game wearing cinder blocks for shoes and do fine still. They don't have to run. Caleb Williams Monday night had to run for that to be a viable game.
Well, and they were talking, you know, both Ben Johnson and Caleb talked about, hey, in gotta have it situations, heck yeah, we'll run. And, you know, the touchdown on the first drive is a good example. That's 3rd and 6, and he goes and scrambles and scores a touchdown. But the other times he ran, Jason, were 1st and 10, 2nd and 6, 2nd and 9, 2nd and 14, 3rd and 10. Those aren't got-to-have-it situations. Those are, we're trying to make something out of nothing. Declan Doyle, who we spoke to on Thursday, said throwing on the run is his superpower. Okay, great. He still needs to play within the scheme or within the confines of an offense. He still needs to be comfortable in the pocket. And Doyle even said, you know, this is a guy who's been hit a lot. Like, getting comfortable in the pocket and not escaping at every sign of, or at the first sign of trouble, that's something that's going to be really important to his development.
Ben Johnson has been really clear talking about coaching Caleb Williams that, first and foremost, this should be said, Caleb's very receptive.
Yep.
And every indication I've gotten from Caleb, from Ben Johnson, from other people, talking to people behind the scenes, is that Caleb is listening. He is taking the coaching. Ben Johnson has been really clear, though, in saying that little to no of the coaching that he got last season as a rookie under Matt Eberflus and Shane Waldron carries over to how he's being coached now. Mm-hmm. It's basically starting from scratch. And I understand his point, but I would still say there are some things that Caleb Williams should have gotten out of that rookie year that should be showing up now. The throwing accuracy is one of them. I think we saw the Bears addressing this with Caleb Williams in training camp as a rookie. He has to understand that everything moves so much faster in the NFL than it did at USC. You are not going to have these talent advantages like when you're USC and you have All-Americans and five-star recruits on your offensive line and in your receiver core, and you're going against Oregon State or San Jose State or whoever. These windows close so fast. Mm-hmm. And Ben Johnson talks a lot to Caleb Williams about his footwork, and that if your feet and legs are not aligned, you're not going to throw accurately, and you're not going to get it there fast enough. And Caleb Williams made a college career out of what you just mentioned, throwing on the run, making these acrobatic throws. It's beautiful to watch when it works like that. It is harder to make that work in the NFL because even the worst corners can close too fast. And if you don't read it fast enough and make the decision fast enough and throw the ball with enough velocity, any corner is going to break that ball up. Caleb should know that from playing 17 games last season.
Well, and I guess that's the question when you talk about last year, is Caleb did a great job not turning the ball over. It was maybe, I think, at some point to his own detriment that he took...
Too careful.
Yeah, that he was too careful. So now how do you bring it back on the other side where you're aggressive? I don't think that they were aggressive enough on Monday night. He wasn't throwing deep. He was rarely looking deep. And when he did, it was there at the end when it was garbage time. So how do you have that balance of we got to protect the ball, but... we've got to attack these guys too.
I think Ben Johnson went through a whole offseason and training camp of Caleb Williams not playing very well. It was not a good training camp for Caleb. Ben Johnson goes into training camp setting the bar at 70% completions for the season and tells you, by the way, that's what I expect in practice too. Mm-hmm. And reveals to you at one point Caleb's more like around 55%, which tracks with what we saw.
Right.
We didn't know the exact number, but that sounds about right based on what we'd seen. 55% kind of halfway through camp, a little higher toward the end of camp. But I think Ben Johnson saw all of that and thought, I'm going to underestimate what I can give him going into this game. And you end up with a very limited game plan that is not very effective and certainly not what a trademark of Ben Johnson's offense.
They have to run the ball better. That's independent of Caleb. I think you saw DeAndre Swift be physical in the third quarter, and that was about it. It'd be nice to get Kyle Manungai in there just for variety's sake and just to take the load off of Swift a little bit.
DeAndre Swift and no one else. They gave three carries to DJ Moore.
To DJ Moore.
All the Caleb runs were not designed. They were all scrambles. That is a really, really narrow run game.
Ben Johnson saying, I got to run the ball more. It's not quite Matt Nagy saying, I'm not an idiot, but it could be here if it continues for another month or so. And the Lions, too, just to get back to them for a second, everything starts, we talk about how their offense isn't as bad as it was Sunday. Everything starts with Jahmyr Gibbs and David Montgomery. And the Bears' defense being so bad against the run in the fourth quarter on Monday, I think if I were a Bears fan, I would be very concerned that Jahmyr Gibbs was going to become the NFC defensive player or offensive player of the week.
Before we get into game predictions and everything, as of the time we're recording this, one thing that should improve for them defensively is that Jalen Johnson and TJ Edwards are trending toward returns. Jalen Johnson, their top cornerback, one of the top cornerbacks in the league, and it always helps to have him, said Thursday that he expects to play against Detroit. But, if you don't have Grady Jarrett missed practice Thursday with the knee injury, and Kyler Gordon...
Thursday.
And Kyler Gordon, Wednesday and Thursday, Kyler Gordon remains in question with the, was it a hamstring or a groin or something
hamstring.
Like that? I mean, those are really big players. Kyler Gordon, we talk about him all the time. What are his stats? I don't know. Mm-hmm. Do you miss him when he's out there? Absolutely. He just does everything while he's out there. He covers other people's mistakes in a way that you can't put numbers on. And while they have very good depth at corner, mm-hmm. there is no substitute for Jalen Johnson and Kyler Gordon. So getting at least Jalen Johnson back, mm-hmm. especially against Amon-Ra St. Brown, would really help them and really lead to some improvement defensively on Sunday.
I talked to Al Harris today. He said, yeah, getting your best players back is a good thing. I went, Thanks.
Yeah, profound.
Great. Let's get into the picks real quick, Jason. It is unanimous. All five members of Team Sun Times, easy for me to say, went with the Lions, working in reverse order. Scoop Jackson, 27-17. Steve Greenberg, 24-23. Mark Potash, 26-24. And then you and I are almost on the exact same page. I've got 27-21. You've got 27-20, all in favor of the Lions. Is there any path to it turning out any different?
Well, you'd have to, if you're the Bears, hope that Detroit continues to struggle offensively like it did in week one, mm-hmm. which is hard to envision. And you'd have to hope on the other side that Caleb Williams takes a really big step forward week one to week two. And quite frankly, coming off the Vikings game, that's hard to envision.
Yeah,
I mean, that would take more faith. You're doing that. You're thinking that's happening solely on faith, mm-hmm. not on something that you saw Monday. There isn't anything you saw Monday that you take and say, oh, yeah, I can see where he's going to have a big game week two. You're just hoping.
I think that as much as Ben Johnson talks up Ford Field being a really tough place to play, and it is, Jason, I think that there's a path where everybody is so worked up about Ben and about, you know, getting off to a good start in person that maybe the emotion's a little too much in Detroit to start. And, you know, the last time I was there, they were losing a playoff game to the Commanders. And the freak out in the second half just – in the energy in the building was tremendous. And I wonder if the Bears can score early and kind of stick around. I wonder whether some of that nervous energy will bind the Lions up a little bit. But, you know, if you're doing this exercise on paper, I think it's really hard to find a way that, for the Bears to come away and win the game.
And it's really going to be problematic if they don't. If they're sitting there 0-2, also 0-2 in the division, I mean, it's tough to climb back from that. I think when you were looking through their schedule going in, you were probably marking this as a loss to begin with. Mm-hmm. But with that, if you, like me, were kind of thinking this is about a 500 team, somewhere in that 7 wins to 10 wins range, you're thinking they're probably beating the Vikings at home in primetime in the opener. And you're thinking that they're going to handle kind of a depleted Dallas team, at least you think going into the season, at home in week 3. And be able to win against the Raiders in week 4. I mean, you start throwing away. We did this last year. You do this every year with the Bears. You start losing games that you're supposed to win. And then where do you make up the wins? Where do they come from? Because they're not. You can't count on those coming from going to Washington and Baltimore and two games against Green Bay
Cincinnati,
in December.
Yeah.
I mean, you cannot lose those. You have to make up for them somehow. And a way to make up for them would be winning a game that nobody thinks you'll win, which is this week at Detroit.
Teams that start 1-1 make the playoffs 41% of the time, Jason. Teams that start 0-2 go 12% of the time. So there you go.
Part of it seems silly that we would react like that and say 0-2, the season's shot. But think about this. I mean, to go from 0-2, and now this has never happened, but let's just talk about the Bears. The Bears would have to go, what, 9-5 the rest of the way to finish above 9-6?
10-5?
What would it be? I'm struggling here.
Yeah, 10-5.
When did the Bears ever go 10-5? Like, look back through since 2018. There's no stretch where they're anywhere close to that.
Nope, but I don't think either you or I think that they're going to win a playoff game anyway. So it's about progress. Real quick, and then we'll get out of here, Jason. Cole Kmet the other day after the game said something that I found oddly comforting.
Okay.
He said, you know, I've won a couple openers around here, and that didn't mean anything either.
And that made you feel better. Okay.
His point, of course, is that the opener does not dictate the way the season goes. And I'll point to last year, which was a circus. And they won the first game. And I'll point to the first game Matt Eberflus ever coached, which is they beat the 49ers in a monsoon. And I think then won two games the rest of the season, something like that. Three games. So if you're looking to comfort your Bears fan friends, give them the short version of what Cole said, which is we won the opener and it didn't much matter either.
I mean, he's right. That's a philosophy that applies to life. I mean, how something starts is not always how it ends up going.
Right.
You could say that about almost anything. I mean, I think you could say that a lot of times about a job that you take. I mean, any job you've taken, if you look back to even when you're a teenager and you take these jobs at like the local pool or Office Depot or Office Max or whatever, you know, day one on that job, you're like, well, what do I do? Or I don't know where things are at. Mm-hmm. Like week three on that job, you feel like you know where things are at. Mm-hmm. Things don't always continue the way that they start. But in some ways, what's troubling about that opener is that it was a continuation, in Caleb Williams' case, of things we had already seen before. It wasn't exactly the start for Caleb Williams.
Nope. And there is baggage. If you are a Bears fan, there is baggage that predates him or Justin Fields or Mitch Trubisky or everybody since 1920, or at the very least, since Sid Luckman. Jason, we will broadcast from the Ford Field press box. Open air press box, by the way. Always a little scary because there's that precipitous drop. If you drop a pen, Jason, it's going three stories down.
I got lots of pens.
Okay. Don't drop a computer then. Yeah, we'll come to you live from there on Sunday night. Until then, you can follow Jason and myself on social media. Check us out at Sun Times. And buy a newspaper if you can. He's Jason. I'm Pat. Thanks so much.